The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Well, I'm delighted now we're joined by the super vet. Noel Fitzpatrick has become something of a superstar in British television as the super vet, and his memoir, Listening to the Animals, is out now in paperback form. Noel, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
I'm absolutely fascinated by some of the photographs that you include in the book of the animals on whom you have performed surgery. Some of the most remarkable surgeries, with dogs in particular. Tell us about the type of things you do and why.
Well, the super vet is an irony, because it's actually just a fairly mediocre guy trying to do his best vet. And I realized a long time ago that I couldn't change the world in the way that I wanted to change it and give animals a fair deal without a platform. So it's very difficult to sell the concept of Channel 4 of fairly mediocre vet. So we went with super vet. And a lot of the questions I get asked are about the more advanced surgeries that we perform. But in reality, that's the tip of the iceberg. So to answer your question directly, we do perform advanced surgeries, but it has to be in the patient's best interest. So a lot of people think that because we put in custom joint replacements that are 3D printed, or we put tumor implants in, or we replace bits of the spine, or we give a dog a bionic leg, that's all we do. Actually, that's 5% of what we do.
It's still very interesting, because it's cutting edge technology. And what benefit do the animals get? I mean, how much of a normal life should they return to afterwards?
Well, that is the whole point. So the reason it's only a tiny proportion of what we do is that it has to be in the animal's best interest. So ethically and morally, from a welfare point of view, that is exactly the point. How much benefit versus how much risk? And sometimes, a lot of times, people come and see me and I say, well, actually, it's not in Freddie's best interest, or it's not in George's best interest.
Which must be devastating for them, because the way people love their pets, and if they're coming to you for what's presumably a very expensive procedure, if you're using this high-end cutting technology, they desperately want their dogs or their animals to have a second chance.
Well, what's interesting about expense is that if I spent all my days doing routine surgeries, I would make more money. Because if I cut, say, 4 cruciate surgeries in a day's surgery, that would make way more money than doing one advanced surgery in terms of the monetary implications. Because if you think about it, if you get a custom knee replacement for a human or for a dog, a big dog will require the same amount of metal, same amount of technology, same amount of cost. And therefore, you really don't make money out of those advanced things the same as you would if you stuck to routine things. But to come to your point, yes, people absolutely do want the best for their animals. But it's my job to be the guardian angel, the gatekeeper of that, and say, may not be in Freddie's best interest. But if it is in Freddie's interest, for example, let's say he has 2 really bad knees and he needs a custom knee replacement on both sides. Well, then I strongly believe that we're moving into an area in 2019 where people want options. Fundamentally, I think society wants options. And the other thing that society is realizing is that for more than 100 years, animals have been used as an experimental model for humans to give us knee replacements and shoulder replacements and so on. And in 1946, shoulder replacements were done in dogs to give humans joint replacements. And yet in 2014... shoulder replacement isn't possible in a dog. And it was done in 1946, which is ludicrous. So my job isn't so much to do the advanced stuff as to make society aware that we need to give animals a fair deal.
And just before I go through some of the remarkable pictures of the things that you've done, I suppose there would be for some people this ethical and moral thing as well, is that should you be doing these things for animals when there are many humans who don't benefit from that type of surgery?
Well, the human field of medicine does benefit from everything that animals have given to us throughout the last more than 100 years. So the argument that human surgery is superior is actually based upon an animal experimental model. In other words, all the drugs and all the implants that we have in humans have to be tested. And that's a bitter pill to swallow for many people. It's unpalatable to think about that. But my life's mission is to help my clinical patients to have options which are equivalent, because they deserve those options.
I suppose the angle I'm coming from, though, is perhaps people might think that your skills might be better used in treating humans, that any monetary resources that go into having hip replacements or knee replacements for a dog or an animal would be better used in a human. What would your response to that be?
That comes from the perspective that human medicine is more important or more valuable. Now, if I had wanted to be a human doctor, I actually got accepted to the Royal College of Surgeons in Dublin the same year as I got accepted to the vet school in UCD. And if I'd wanted to go away and be a human doctor, I would have done. But I wanted to look after all of the animals. So my skill set is best applied to the patients that I care most about, which is the dog and the cat.
And for all the talk about a shortage of doctors at present, and it is a major issue with GPs, particularly in Ireland and in Britain, it does seem to be a shortage of vets as well. It's not necessarily a profession that many people seem to want to go for because of the particularly long hours involved and the nighttime calls and the rest of it. There does seem to be a certain element of vocation about it.
There certainly used to be, but it's getting less so now.
Really?
In terms of the onerous nature, because there are out-of-hour services, there are weekend services, and increasingly vets are graduating and they're having a relatively good work-life balance. I mean, 80% approximately, as far as I know, of new graduates in the United Kingdom are girls rather than boys. And obviously having a work-life balance is very important, particularly if you have children. So the era when I grew up in Ireland and was out all night calving cows and lambing sheep may still be the case in rural parts, but increasingly graduates are going into small animal medicine and they have a better work-life balance.
I'm just looking at some of the photographs in your book here, and some are extraordinary. You have one here, a Belgian shepherd dog, Storm. You fitted the first ever canine skeletally anchored bionic limb. Then you have another one, a five-year-old dog who had a horrific accident, or five-month-old dog. You built what's called a distraction compression external skeleton fixator. This is
yes.
Very complicated sounding. That allowed you to transplant his tail vertebrae and parts of his pelvis to grow him new hands and wrists. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, all medicine and all surgery is incremental advances. And in fact, I talk about this a bit in the book. There was a Russian scientist, medical scientist called Ilizarov, and he was coming off the back of the Second World War in Russia. And there were a lot of people coming back from the war that had all kinds of defect non-unions, i.e. a big hole in their bone. And he pioneered the suspension of bone on wires inside a frame. And he, as the story goes, he saw the tines of a haymaker machine and the spokes of a bicycle wheel. And he figured out that he could put wires like the spokes of a bicycle wheel perpendicular to the bone, like a bicycle wheel at right angles to the bone and another bicycle wheel below that at right angles to the bone, link those two bicycle wheels together and rock them up and down and make bone grow, which is the theory of osteogenesis. And he found, he went away on holiday actually, and he found that as the patient rocked the bone up and down, it grew new bone. And then he developed the theory of distraction osteogenesis, which means pulling the two bicycle wheels apart and growing bone in the middle, which we use a lot. In fact, it was on the SuperVet television show about 3 weeks ago. And in that dog that you saw, that's taken that another level still, which is transplanting bone into a defect and using a trampoline type movement between the bicycle wheels, top and bottom, to allow bone to integrate into a defect. So you use it as a scaffold, and you create an electrical charge pumping through it, and you allow bone to flow through the little network in the. You allow blood to flow through the little networks in the bone, canaliculi they're called, and you can integrate, in that case, the dog's tail to make a new wrist and hand.
How long did that all take?
That probably took about 3 months in
total.
How
do you manage to keep a dog stationary?
Well, they walk on the frame. So you can make walking frames that they just walk around on, and inside that frame, you can do the business. Whatever it is you want to
do. Because you think when you have a major surgery for a human, they're probably confined to bed and they're kept immobile and you tell them to do that or they can't do it. Mm. But it must be very hard to get a dog to actually do that for you.
Well, you have to design around that. So a lot of dogs will be very tolerant. And again, it has to be in their interest. So the time frame within which you achieve anything has to be reasonable. So that the animal doesn't suffer.
Yeah.
And that's very important. And increasingly, as technology advances, you have a greater and greater ethical responsibility to do the right thing. But most dogs and most cats will tolerate stuff like that if they're not in pain. And for a period of 6 to 8 weeks is reasonable, I think, to achieve 10 years of life. In which case, and that dog was a case in point.
When you do this, I'm immediately starting to think of the maltreatment of so many dogs, the terrible trade that you have in puppies, the puppy farms around the place. The difference between the love that you clearly show for animals and their owners have for their animals and the relationships with the trade in dogs that goes on now in these islands.
Well, I did a show a year and a half ago called Animal Rescue Live in the UK. And we talked about dog trafficking quite a lot. My job is to do my best to promote responsible awareness of people for their role in looking after dogs. And I think that you can't tackle badness through more badness. You can't just throw your hands in the air and say, oh, well, that's bad. I'm going to say that's all terrible and do nothing. The only way you'll ever counter badness is with goodness. And so I will say, well, I don't think that that is acceptable. And we're going to try and highlight this, that you shouldn't be getting a dog in a car park and not having seen the parents of that dog. And that you should, as the responsible guardian of that animal, take a role. And when I started on Channel 4 doing the television show, I insisted that they weren't called owners. I called them mum and dad. And at the time, 4 or 5 years ago, that was considered unusual. But now it's a common currency and people come in and they say, hi, I'm the mum of Freddie, or I'm the dad of George, or whatever a dog's name or cat's name is. And I think that's important because it transfers the idea that they are intrinsic family members. And as an integral family member, you got that responsibility. And people might, you know, be quite cynical about this, and particularly people, you know, listening to this show who don't like cats or dogs, and they say, as you know, outlined at the beginning, well, why aren't you doing this in human medicine and blah, 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 blah. Well, hang on a minute. Firstly, if you've never spent that time with a cat or dog or felt that hope and redemption that comes with that love, you can't really judge. I've just been in a book signing queue at Eason's, and there were people with mental and physical disabilities who have absolutely found hope and redemption in that dog, and people have no right to criticize that. And secondly, if more of us showed love to an animal or to each other, the world would be a better place. And thirdly, unless we go to Mars sometime soon, this is the only planet we have. So don't ridicule somebody who loves a cat or a dog as strange. Actually edify them as somebody who is transferring compassion into the world, because there's enough badness out there. And it behoves all of us to look at a book like this or any other book that has a bit of positivity in it and say, you know what? He might be a leprechaun on the television, but he means well. And he's trying to transfer a little love into the world.
I sometimes think at home that if my 5 children are given the choice between me and the dog, I might lose out.
Well, that's very, very pertinent example of hierarchy and love. And it's very important because to them, the dog's an integral family member.
Yeah, not that I'll tell them that they could lose out to the dog as well in any circumstances. Just briefly, while I have you there, how long are you out of Ireland now at this stage? I mean, you grew up on a farm in County Laois,
yeah,
near Ballyfin.
Yeah.
You were just telling me before we started, your mother is still alive there. But why did you leave Ireland and when?
Yeah, so when I set out to write this book, I wanted it to reflect the Ireland that I grew up in the 80s, 70s and 80s. And I left in 1991. And I wanted it to reflect the journey of anybody, not just people who love animals, but anybody who ever had a dream, anybody who ever had an aspiration, anybody who ever felt worthless, useless, helpless, like I did when I lost my first lamb on a field in Ireland. And that's chapter one of the book. That's not about me. That's about anybody who felt helpless and looked at the stars in heaven and thought, oh, I wish upon a star that things might be better. And then the struggles going through school and bullying and so on, and then studying day and night. And I'm not looking for a medal for that, because dogs don't care if you're called professor, and they certainly don't care how many letters you have after your name. So I am not by any means looking for a medal for writing this book or anything else. I just wanted to reflect on your question, which is why you leave anything. And you leave something because you're dissatisfied with something that you're not able to fix, either within yourself or within your vocation. And my vocation was to try and do the best I could with medicine. So I went to America, I went to London, and I tried to learn everything I could about medicine and about surgery and about media to be able to talk to you and say, I don't care where you live. You could live anywhere in the world. But our only hope is to look after each other and have some medicine, because medicine is not just about drugs and implants. It's about love. Most people sign up to be a doctor or sign up to be a vet because they want to bring love into the world, in some guise. And that's what I wanted to do. And that's why I went to try and get training from anybody I could. Because I wasn't bright I was not bright enough to get an internship or residency to learn further after vet school.
You have to be bright when you're talking to me about all the surgery that you perform and the mechanical expertise that you just described there earlier.
That's a sense of discovery. It's not, you don't need to be a genius to discover. You just need to be open to the possibility of solution. I wouldn't consider myself particularly clever. For anybody who's out there and wants to read the book or is listening to this that thinks, oh, I'm not bright enough, that's nonsense. You're actually as bright as you choose to be. And the other thing about the book and the television show and everything else, there's as many critics as there are people who will praise you. And if you listen to either of those too much, praise or criticism, is going to narrow your creative window and turn you into a Muppet to the people who want to pull your puppet strings. And I very strongly feel that you travel the world, and I'm intensely proud of my Irish heritage, and I'm delighted to have had the environment that I grew up in. And I'd like to bring to the world a sense of hard work will get you wherever you want to go. Compassion will get you wherever you want to go. And you'll only get back what you put out. You don't deserve love if you're not putting love out. You don't deserve knowledge if you're not sharing knowledge. You don't deserve hope if you're not giving hope. And I can tell you for a fact, because I see it every day, the more of it you give, the more of it you'll have. So that's why I traveled far and wide, and that's why I'm now bringing it back, because I love to be here, and it's a great honour to, you know, share with some people who are in whatever part of Ireland reading that book or listening to this show.
Noel Fitzpatrick, Becoming the Super Vet, Listening to the Animals is the book. Thanks very much for taking the time to join us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.